Oh, that's right. We are right here this afternoon, and today I've got a call-in interview with Dr. Jane Orient. She's the executive director of Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. She's been in solo practice of general internal medicine since 1981 and is a clinical lecturer in medicine at the University of Arizona College of Medicine. She's also written a book, Your Doctor Is Not In, Healthy Skepticism About National Healthcare, which had been published by Crown. How you doing today, Dr. Orient?
Well, it's a pretty good day in Tucson so far, although there's all kinds of trouble in the world.
There is all kinds of trouble in the world. You know, I think the last time we spoke, we talked about this was when the Affordable Care Act had been signed and was inching towards being implemented. Since then, of course, the Affordable Care Act has been implemented. And of course, then there's a lot of questions about what will Medicare actually become, like the VA situation that we've been dealing with. A good note is that on Thursday, President Obama will sign the law that both the Senate and the House passed to put some money over there in the VA and hopefully start solving some of the problems that they've had there. But what do you think about, will Medicare become like the VA?
I'm afraid that all of medicine in the United States may become like that. The VA is socialized medicine. It's a single payer. It is run by the government. It's a very rigid, top-down bureaucracy. And its problem is really not lack of money, but the culture of the place and the administrative structure of the place, so that it's really almost impossible to solve problems. And there's a huge amount of money that's wasted simply because of the way things are set up. You've got to spend all the money before the end of the year or lose it. We have to spend a huge amount of money on managers and administrators and various officers that has nothing to do with medical care but only serves to obstruct taking care of the sick.
You know, and one of the big things that came out of this, of course, was the secret lists and people not getting the care. You know, I think that has been one of the biggest issues. Even in our state, we have a Dorn Medical Center here, and it was way down on the list when you talk about wait times and getting to a doctor. Plus, if you're in an area that is not close to a VA center, you have a long way to go to get to a doctor, particularly when you're sick. That's not something you want to have to do.
Well, the VA is set up like government systems, say, in the National Health Service in Britain, to measure compliance by kind of metrics that are in the electronic medical record or in the bureaucrats' records or logbooks, which are often set up to obscure things rather than to reveal them. And the people who are in charge get paid based on how well their metrics conform. So there's all kinds of reasons to jiggle and even fabricate the numbers to make you look good, even though patients may be waiting less time in the emergency room because they're waiting in the ambulance outside instead.
You know, this is totally frightening, and particularly for people that, you know, we're talking about Medicare, but what about the effect will that eventually be on the Affordable Care Act?
The Affordable Care Act set up this independent payment advisory board, or IPAP, that some people call death panels.
Right.
It isn't exactly that, but it does put a lid on the amount of money that can be spent at first on Medicare and then throughout the country on private medical care as well. And once that ceiling is reached, then some pretty draconian things happen. Maybe the price allowed for services will be cut so much that no one will be willing or able to offer the services. So, in fact, your doctor will become your very own private death panel, deciding that he'd better not let you have something, because if he does, he will be punished either by a severe cut in pay or maybe by being booted out of the system for not being adequately compliant.
Dr. Orient, that's absolutely frightening.
Well, it should be.
And you know, it I know one of the big things that people have been complaining about, particularly on the Affordable Care Act, is the fact that it used to be when you had insurance that your insurance had a deductible, but you didn't have to meet that deductible right up front. You had over time the insurance would take part of, you know, would use part of that. But now I've heard people going to the hospital and everything have to actually pay the deductible before they'll get service. And those people that have a $5,000 deductible, they have a big problem.
Well, I think there's going to be a lot more situations like that, because for one thing, the hospitals are terrified that they're not going to get paid. For one thing, they may not even be able to tell what the patient has insurance or not. The insurance companies are not giving out accurate information. If the patient has skipped a premium payment, then the hospital may be on the hook for eating the bill. And so a lot more facilities are going to be demanding upfront treatment, because otherwise they may face a very high risk of not getting paid.
And as far as Medicare, you know, that's the Affordable Care Act. And now to go back to Medicare, from what I have talked to several of our representatives, they say Medicare is going to be broken, it's either 6 or 8 years, I don't remember, and then Social Security, they're saying 20 years, if nothing is done.
Well, actually, that's just a lie.
That's a lie?
It depends on an accounting fiction called the trust fund. And they're saying it'll be insolvent when the money in the trust fund is gone. But in fact, the money in the trust fund is already gone, and all that's in there are IOUs that have to be redeemed by taking money out of other items in the federal treasury to pay them off. So the money that any excess that came in over what was needed to pay for things was immediately spent, and that helped to make the budget deficit look lower than it actually was. But it did make sort of a budget, a deficit that's off the books that has to be paid for somehow. And I think already both Social Security and Medicare are paying out more than they're taking in.
Sure. And, you know, I think one of the biggest problems is we've got so many baby boomers who are retiring. So, therefore, we have less people working to put the money in to cover these things.
Well, that's true, and the baby boomer retirement is something that really wasn't figured into the calculations.
So, what is going to happen to Medicare, and with the money that's being, I'll use the word money, that's being thrown at the VA? Will it fix the VA, or is it just going to continue the problems? What's your take on it?
Well, my opinion is that you can't fix the VA by pouring more money into it. It's a culture problem. It's a structure problem. It's an incentive problem. And just more money is not the answer. It will just be more money wasted. There may be a few more veterans who get care right at first, but eventually the money's going to be sucked into the administrative.
Just out of curiosity, I'm kind of the feeling, you know, people talk about, oh, vote in the next election, that's going to make the big difference. You know, you've got to get the people out that you don't like and put the people in that you do like. But it seems to me, Jane, and I kind of seems like you're kind of bearing this out, that the bureaucracy itself, when it becomes so large, it actually has a life of its own.
Well, that's true. That so much of the government is run by bureaucrats who are not accountable to the public in any way. Congress has delegated a huge amount of its authority to these executive agencies. And so they can just say, well, the experts are taking care of it. It's not my fault. So it is extremely important to change the regime that's in power and replace it with one that is responsive to the people and that believes in obeying the Constitution. But we have a much bigger problem than that, because it's going to take a long time to whittle down that bureaucracy.
And, well, you know, and here brings up another question. Do you think that it can be done, whether it's the VA or Medicare? Because we're kind of working with both of these here this afternoon.
It's hard to know what's going to happen. I mean, the money printing press is not a perpetual motion machine. At some point, if we keep borrowing 40% or maybe even more of every dollar we spend, and we plan to either not maybe pay it back with the labor of generations yet unborn,
right,
or default on the debt, or default in effect by just inflating the currency so that it's not worth anything anymore, something bad has got to happen. We cannot indefinitely make money out of thin air and still have that money be worth anything.
Sure. And let's see, if anybody wants to call in, 229-7984, 229-7984. If you have a question for Dr. Orient, please give us a call and we'll try to get it on the air. But Dr. Orient, and I wonder, since you are a professor out there at University of Arizona, how in the medical, how is the doctoring of new students coming along?
I mean, how is the education of this?
Well, how is the education? But what is the feeling of the students? Are we filling up the number of people that want to become doctors and involved in healthcare? I know we got a lot of nurses and respiratory care and that type of thing. But what about the actual doctors?
Well, I know that college counselors are telling the smart kids don't go into medicine.
The smart kids not to go into medicine.
Right, because you'll never be able to make a good living. You'll be constantly regulated. You'll be up to your ears in debt before you ever earn your first dollar. Why don't you look into business or law or engineering? So while the number of applicants hasn't diminished, I think that the quality of the applicants probably has, although that's always hard to determine because of the way that the tests have been changed. I can say that a very high proportion of the new applicants have a name that's very difficult to spell because they are coming from abroad, and I don't know if that's because we can't find enough qualified Americans to fill the spots or what. The people who are graduating, it appears they just don't have the same kind of work ethic that the older doctors have had, and so they are going to be less productive. Plus, many of them are going to find that they can't make it in medicine because with the price controls and the way Obamacare is going on, they won't be able to pay off their debts.
Well, that right there is going to become a big problem. And what about somebody who is in, what about doctors who are in private practice? In our area, we've had several that would say, you know, next year, whatever, they're going to hang it up. They're going to go ahead and retire. They don't need to retire. I mean, it's not that they're of the age or anything else, but they just can't see that they're going to be making money futuristically.
Well, a lot of doctors are contemplating taking an early retirement. How many of them will do that, I'm not sure. But they could possibly have 10 or 15 years of service still left in them.
Right.
But in the past they would have worked until they dropped.
Yeah.
But how can you stay in business when you have to take money out of your savings to meet payroll or to pay the rent or to pay your insurance? Nobody can do that for very long. What doctors who are not retiring are doing is they will go to work for a hospital or some other big entity. And they say, okay, let the hospital's huge legal staff and administrative staff figure out how to cope with the regulations and just pay me a salary. But what happens then inevitably is that the doctor is not going to be your doctor. He's not working for you. He's working for the system. What the system thinks of him is what determines whether he gets paid. And plus, doctors who are on salary just tend to be less productive. They're not going to stay late.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the work isn't done, they'll just pass it on to the next shift. This is observed over and over again. We want to get rid of pay for service.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it means that we're going to be paying for non-service and that people will have incentives to avoid work, because why should you work harder than everybody else when all you get is more responsibility but no more money?
Well, in our area, our hospital here has bought up almost all the practices. I think there's a few left here that are holdouts, but most all the practices have been bought up by the hospital.
This is happening in many cases, and we will maybe eventually see what happens, but the initial reports are not really good. And, you know, the hospitals are taking a big risk in doing this, too, because they do lose money on buying the practices, and they are hoping that what ultimately will happen is it will increase their market share. They'll be able to squeeze out their competition, and then they'll be able to raise their prices even higher than they already are.
Well, I know that, you know, the prices that they put on there, and I've seen people in some practices and the price that they're having to pay because they don't have insurance is phenomenal.
You know, patients without insurance, the hospitals may be sticking them with many multiples of what the multi-billion dollar insurance company would pay on their behalf. And I think this is pretty outrageous. And
I agree.
Patients who can look ahead of time, who are not having an emergency admission but are having surgery, they need to look around and find a hospital that will give them a fixed price for the service. And there are more and more facilities like that.
And they are usually independent doctor-owned facilities, aren't they?
They are, and those are exactly the ones that the Unaffordable Care Act is trying to prevent. Okay, put them out of business or keep them from expanding or prevent them from opening in the first place.
Absolutely. Well, as a doctor, do you practice internal medicine now?
I do.
You do? What has the effect been on yours? Do you take insurance or do you take the Affordable Care?
I haven't taken insurance since 1981. I mean, I haven't taken insurance ever. Not since I left the VA back in 1981.
You left the VA in 1981?
And take insurance or sign HMO contracts. And I quit Medicare back in 1990 when the patients could no longer file their own claims. I still am happy to see Medicare-eligible patients, but the payment arrangements are just between us. They have no way of getting money out of Medicare.
And what has been the effect on your practice?
Well, the initial effect really on my practice, mainly from the HMOs coming to town, mm-hmm. was to greatly diminish my practice because patients thought they had to go see somebody who was on their plan. And, of course, they did if they wanted the plan to pay for them. So I had to find other ways of bringing in income. So that's taken up more and more of my time. But I'm still open for patients who place some value on my services and whom I think I can help.
Absolutely. And what would you say about your charges? Would they be less than the inflated prices that we pay for insurance with insurance costs?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I'm hearing you.
Well, I mean, the charges that, when you charge a patient, I had a CT scan of my chest the other day, and it was, was it $2,100 or $1,500? But then I had a bone density. Oh, that's right. My chest x-ray was $2,184. The bone density was $1,500 for 15 minutes.
Well, I think that you should be able to do much better than that. The last time I had a chest x-ray, I went to the radiology place with my checkbook and said, how much is it? They said $75.
Oh, wow.
And that was that. A lot of times you can get a CT scan even for a couple hundred dollars when you would pay the hospital a couple thousand.
Right.
But it all depends on whether you go in there with your checkbook and say, okay, I'm going to pay you directly. I'm going to pay you now, but I want a decent price, and if I don't get one, I'm going to go somewhere else.
Wow. See, that's the thing that we're dealing with. And I don't think most people understand this. Do you, Dr. Orient?
It is really hard to persuade people that insurance is not the only way to pay for medical care. It's just the most expensive way for medical care. I mean, if you're turning over $10,000 a year to an insurance company, you might as well be throwing it out the window. It's going to pay for other people's medical care. 40% of it is going to pay for something or other that has no relation to medical care. And, you know, the day after your plan expires, then you don't have any insurance. So you would have been much better off in most cases putting the money in a dedicated bank account. Except if what we really need is the ability to buy catastrophic insurance for really, really big bills, really, you know,
sure.
heart attacks or accidents and that sort of thing. But we should not be relying on these third-party payment plans for every little thing. All it does is create corruption and drive up the cost.
That's right. And that's where the health savings accounts came in.
Right. Those are, yes.
Right.
Those are always a good idea. You don't need to have one that's approved by the government. You only need that to get the tax savings from it. I mean, the tax code is responsible for a lot of this because you have to use after-tax dollars if you pay for things yourself or if you buy insurance that you yourself own instead of being on your employer's plan.
Wow. Well, you know, and I know we've gotten off track from what we were supposed to talk about here, but it's fascinating stuff. So what do you think is going to happen to Medicare?
Well, I think ultimately it is going to run out of money. It's going to crash and burn. There's going to be severe rationing. There will be more and more patients shunted off to hospice when they really could be cured or restored to a functional state of health with a little bit of effort like we would do today. I think that the only hope for my generation is to expand the little wedge of freedom and find a way out of Medicare. Don't sign up for Part B. Try to find an independent doctor who will still see you for cash. And just try to find a way not to be subject to the rationing.
Don't you think one of the problems, though, too, is that it's like Medicare and Social Security. A lot of people go with it's a right. It's a rite of passage. I've paid for it. It's a right.
Well, people think they have a right to medical care or that they should have a right to medical care. But you know what they really have when you have socialized medicine like Medicare is the right to a place in line. You have a right to exactly what the government decides to give you. You don't have the right, even today, to spend your own hard-earned money to buy your own medical care from a doctor who signed up with Medicare. I mean, supposing that your doctor would be willing to do something for $100 but just can't keep his office open for what Medicare will allow him to charge, you cannot take $100 out of your pocket and say, please take care of me now. I'm going to pay you, because that's a criminal offense on the part of the doctor to accept your money if he takes Medicare money for anybody.
Wow. And once they are off of Medicare, they really the doctor could really have a lot of problems with the patients that they've been trying to care for.
Well, if you're out of Medicare, and I've been out of Medicare since 1990, I have no hassles from Medicare at all. But the problem is that patients don't want to see me because they want to take advantage of their Medicare. And if they come to see me, they have to pay. And actually, my fees are quite reasonable, people tell me. But people who don't put enough value on medical services, or it hasn't even occurred to them to ask how much is it. They assume it's going to be something they can't afford.
That's probably the biggest problem right there, isn't it? That they assume that it's going to be too expensive, so they don't even ask. And yet, when we buy anything out there, I'm in the jewelry business too. People are always asking me, what's the best deal on this piece of jewelry here? When we go to buy a car, we haggle about a car. Why shouldn't we, haggle or ask for the best price for our medical care?
You should be able to do that. But see, people start with this preconceived notion. If you ask them how much they think their doctor is getting paid to do something, they will be shocked to find out that what he's getting may be only a tiny fraction of what they think their insurance company might have paid them.
Well, it is always mind-boggling when you see the cost of the bill, like I was telling you, and then what it is settled for with the insurance company.
Yeah, those are hospital bills. I mean, and doctor bills are generally much more reasonable than that, at least if you're not covered by insurance.
Exactly. So those are the things that you end up dealing with. Any pieces of advice for people that are listening to this, Jane, and they're saying, oh my God, what should I do?
Well, you might go to our website, aapsonline.org. That's the website of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. You can go to the patients tab, where we have a list of doctors who are friendly to patients who want to pay them in cash. You can search for Sean Parnell, that's S-E-A-N-P-A-R-N-E-L-L, who has a book on the independent patients and the self-pay patients and how to get what you need at an affordable price. It's probably the best little book I've ever seen that's aimed for the patient.
Wow.
But there's a lot of information on APSonline.org.
Well, that, you know, that sounds terrific. And I think that's one of the things always we hold, we're afraid to ask a doctor, you know, to say, well, you know, is there another option? You know, a doctor tells you this is what's wrong with you, and by God, you go with it, and there you are. And you don't ask the questions you should ask.
Well, I think people need to ask. And, you know, try asking the doctor. They're certainly looking on the Internet and believing just about anything they find there.
Yeah.
But why they don't do a simple thing like ask the doctor what it costs to come see him is a mystery.
Yeah. Basically, I think because we've been raised to believe that doctors are like God, right?
The people don't seem to think that anymore.
Well, okay, I agree. They may not, but I mean, I think we were raised with that philosophy, you know, that if your doctor...
How old you are. Right now, doctors are public enemy number one.
Public enemy number one? Wow. Well, it really is sad to hear, though, that we'll wrap this up, but it really is sad to hear that... A lot of very brilliant, and what will that brilliant students that could become doctors are being urged to go away from that. What will be the eventual outcome of that? I mean, we have had superior doctors here in our country, and what will happen if we do not get the brightest and the most to have the most ability to be doctors for the future?
Well, you'll have doctors who are much poorer. Than they used to be. They will not be as interested in you. They will not care as much. They will not work as hard, and they won't know as much.
And I guess, what about for cures and moving forward with all that?
Well, we really are in a situation where the very soul of American medicine is being threatened, and people need to understand that that is happening, why it's happening, and what we could possibly do. Stop it.
All right. Well, Dr. Jane Orient, thank you so much for calling us. The website to check out again one more time, Jane?
AAPSonline.org.
All right. Thank you so much for calling us today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. Well, there you go. Was that interesting, chilling, scary conversation? I think so. And I would like to... I would like to know if you have a comment out there, because where are we going with this? I mean, we started out, we were supposed to be talking about Medicare. Will Medicare become like the VA? And here we are. Well.